cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Hour 3 of Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, Bob McCown and Stephen Brent in our Toronto studios. Greetings, salutations to y'all. Hope you're getting ready for a delightful long weekend, a weekend where most people with family and friends, and we expect you'll be among them. Will you, Brent?
I'll be among my family, yes.
There.
We're going to dine together. I think that's what you do at Easter, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Eat a Easter bunny or something? I guess you don't do that. You don't eat rabbit for Easter, do you?
Well, no.
I like rabbit. But
I don't eat any rabbit. I'm not having rooster either.
No, that's true.
And you know, you can get a chocolate rooster too. I'm afraid somebody's going to give me a chocolate rooster. I'm going to give it to the real rooster. I don't know if he likes chocolate or not.
I think it might be bad for him. But if you survived everything to this point.
Survived a lot. He'll probably get over it. Terry Ryan, 8th overall pick in the draft, and played 8 games in the National Hockey League, and has written a book about it.
And has many stories to tell.
Tales of a First Round Nothing. Great title. And he'll join us in studio in just a little bit.
It's a fun book.
To chat. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada is with us. Hello, Heels.
How are you guys doing today?
Swell. So here's the deal.
They sell chocolate Stanley Cups. Did you know that in Toronto?
Oh, I'm sure the National Hockey... Well, that's the only way you can get one in Toronto.
There you go.
As if it's in chocolate.
You know where I'm going.
So here's the deal. For years, for as long as I can remember, people have talked about the importance of goaltending in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I'm now convinced that this was a scam perpetrated by former goaltenders who wanted everybody to know how important they felt they were. And goaltenders win games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. How many games were won by goaltenders last night?
Well, how many games were lost by goaltenders?
Question. Theoretically, all six of them.
It was certainly a factor in the game. I can tell you, if Bishop played net for Tampa Bay, their team would have played better and certainly would have had a chance of winning the game. Instead, they put together, Tampa did, their worst game in 83 that they played this year.
But they still did. They got to overtime in a game they were completely outplayed, so... They had more of a chance than they probably should have, wouldn't they?
Well, because Price gave up 4.
But then we get to overtime, and Price was lousy. 4 goals and 16 shots. You're not going to get a better chance to beat Carey Price than that. That's not going to happen again. And we get to overtime, and Carey all of a sudden took a look at his gold medal and said, what am I doing? And he played pretty good in overtime. 9 shots, 9 saves, stopped Nate Thompson on a breakaway. He made some big saves at the right time. And at the other end, their goaltender decided to play the entire overtime on his knees. And the game winner, not square, on his knees. He was on his knees before the puck even came to the front of the net. So, you know, they're looking at that guy and saying, we might have to go to number 3, which is the Latin fiend Guzlewski. That's what Tampa Bay's thinking today.
Well, I mean, look, it happens. I don't think it necessarily means anything, but it is. It was. I don't know whether it's a trend we're going to see continue, and I have no idea what the over under on those 3 games were. But I can guarantee you, all of them went over. You know, they're probably like 5.5 or something goals. You just expect less scoring in a Stanley Cup playoff game, and we got. Look at great for the fans. If you're watching the game and you like goals, and I do, it was a great night. All 3 games had lots of opportunities and lots of biscuits in the basket.
Well, the first time I can recall goaltending not being a factor in the playoffs was the 2010 Stanley Cup that we covered, where it was Philadelphia against Chicago. And they had Niemi in net for Chicago, who looked like he was a baby moose that had just been born. And then you had Michael Layton in the Philadelphia net, who got picked up on waivers for $12,500. And both goaltenders, after the first period of game 1, I think my comment was, first save wins. because it was like that. And I think a lot of teams looked at that and said, you don't have to spend $6 million on a goalie, because those guys were making, you know, basically the minimum, and right. Chicago ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it can't happen. But, I mean, you know, you'd like to think it doesn't happen on any kind of regular basis, that the cream does rise to the top. Was there one of the winning goaltenders that you thought particularly, of the games you saw, that particularly was lucky?
Well, I'm not Pierre McGuire-like-ish. Like, when I do a game, I pretty much don't watch all the other ones.
Oh, okay.
So the one game that I got to watch was live and was nearly decapitated in that game when Dale Weiss decided to come join me for part of the game.
Yeah, how was that, by the way?
Well, it got to be a pretty physical game, and both teams, you know, started to – they have so much inexperience, particularly Tampa Bay, and they were kind of mystified by the moment. But there were a couple players that were running around a little bit, and one of them was a gentleman by the name of Paquette for Tampa Bay, and he was mad he wasn't drafted by Montreal, so he was willing to run at everybody. And if Jeff Molson came down from the private box, he was going to run at him too. He took a wild run right between the benches. He jumped up in the air. I thought it was Greg Joy in the 76 Olympics. And backwards came over the bench in with me and ended up banging into the backboard, smashed his head up against the end of what would be probably the bench, and then proceeded to get up, looked at me, and shrugged his shoulders and jumped back on the ice. It's kind of a comical moment from last night. But, you know, I started the very first game in that building and got out of the way a lot of stuff in that night in that building. Played quite crummy, and I have continued to do the same in that building, and I got out of the way.
But this has got to be the most activity in your little space there, hasn't it, in terms of people actually invading your space?
You get players that don't make it to the bench because of the long change and will jump in with you and then kind of put a cloaking device on and pretend they're not there, like, does anyone see me because I'm in the wrong bench? But not like that. That was about as wild as you're going to get. And it's as, you know, he must have taken 16 steps, jumped in the air, and I could see him coming. You have a sense of when it's happening, but that one for sure was about as big a thunder as you're going to get.
With Glenn Healy, losing is never a good thing. But I wonder if losing the way they did might not be encouraging for a team like Columbus.
In what sense?
Because they were in it. I mean, they didn't get their doors blown in.
No, and they will be. And we'll see. They'll see a six-game series there. The Rangers aren't this dominant powerhouse. They've got a phenomenal goaltender, four defense, and a couple lines. But you don't get to see Columbus enough, you know, and that's probably part of the factor. If you saw Columbus play on a regular basis, you'd probably recognize that they're not the team that they were 7 years ago. They have added some pieces. They made a good trade with Nash to get some depth players. They've got a really good goaltender. Their defense is pretty mobile, and they're an equal of the New York Rangers. Yet, you know, what may define the series may be the goaltending. It's simple as one save that's made at one end and not at the other. And this is, you know, with due respect, Bobrovsky's one of Ezina. So, you know, he's a pretty good goaltender. He's not way over his head. It's going to be a tough series for the New York Rangers.
Of the series that gets started tonight, is there one that jumps out at you? I guess the obvious one is the Sharks and the Kings.
One is real interesting to me, just only because, you know, this is what L.A. did the last time they won a Stanley Cup. They kind of wandered through the season, and then all of a sudden they took their paddle and they put it in the stream and said, okay, I'm in charge now. And they've played great since the Olympics, and that to me could be a huge upset series. And, you know, likewise, the other one in the West, two versus three, that could be an upset. So there are a couple ones that I'm going to watch, and we've talked about them. You know, Chicago and St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, St. Louis playing so poorly going in, and what's that going to be like tonight? The Stanley Cup champs aren't going to go away quietly. So, yeah, there's some games that I'm going to watch with some interest, and those are two of them, Chicago, St. Louis, and L.A. Chicago, St. Louis, L.A., San Jose. Two good ones.
On the coaching side of this, Glenn, you know, we've had one coach dismissed at the end of the season, Barry Trotz, who everybody seems to think is going to get a job pretty quickly. Is there anybody coaching in this playoff tournament right now whose job is on the line?
Yeah, I would say San Jose's coach. You know, he's you know, certainly had great regular seasons. He's had marginal playoff success, and that is the team that they sell every seat that is available, every rink board ad. They can't sell more inventory, but they don't make money just because of the price of their tickets. And at some point, this owner knows that going deep into the postseason and playing four rounds, that provides you that cushion of not having to go into your pocket and fund a team that's very successful. And so, you know, you look at their club this year, it was a banner year again, and at some point they have to make their stamp in the playoffs and go deep and do what Chicago has done two of the past 3 years and some of the big boys like Boston in the East. And so, you know, that's a situation where I look in pretty closely. And the other one, believe it or not, it's kind of similar, but St. Louis. You know, that's a group. They lose six coming down the stretch, you know, and is Ken Hitchcock's voice one that can get them some playoff success, and it's going to be hard to do against Chicago. But again, an impatient organization with an impatient owner that went out and made a bold move to make a stand here in playoffs. They're not sure if they're going to sign Ryan Miller, so they make a big trade for him. And if they don't get it done, what a waste of a bunch of picks and good players and prospects to get Ryan Miller for a rental.
How about Dan Bylsma in Pittsburgh? Because, you know, they won last night, but they were life and death. You know, they had to come back to beat Columbus. If that team doesn't go at least get to the conference final, is there a possibility there? Because, you know, because there are expectations, you know, their goaltending could let them down. All kinds of things could happen there. But do you think there's any pressure on him?
Yes, and I felt the pressure last year. I thought, you know, when he went down last year that there would have been just an enormous push to find, again, another voice because, you know, if the players have tuned you out, then, you know, well, what are we going to do? We're going to go back with the same guy barking behind the bench? And they signed him to an extension. So that, to me, says, wow, they must have been comfortable with the way he coached. But, you know, something's not quite right since after the Olympics. Kind of the temperature has changed since the Olympic team stuff, and I don't know why. I'm not in that locker room. As Brendan Shanahan likes to say, I'm an outsider, but I don't hear great things. And, you know, if they don't win in this business, you know, Mario's pretty tight with a lot of the players on that hockey club. You know, if Mario Lemieux comes to you and says, tell me about the coach, you're going to tell him about the coach. It's not like some corporate guy coming to you and you're going to find a way to lie your way through it. Player to player, they tend to be pretty honest.
I think it's fair to say, I think we would all agree, you could probably just about put a blanket over the first four at least in the Western Conference, and it'd almost be impossible to pick who's the best of that group. And probably you go deeper than that, five, maybe even six. So when you get a series like this, Blues and Blackhawks or the Kings and Sharks, and, I mean, should coaches' jobs, the future of franchises, be on the line when it's almost impossible to get a consensus as to who's going to wind up winning either of those series?
You know, you're right. And, you know, let's take it one step even deeper. So you get the Washington Capitals, which, as you watch them down the stretch, broke every team rule possible, whistle to whistle. Alex Ovechkin was an absolute dog down the stretch. And he blatantly and openly says, well, I'm paid to score goals. Well, Alex, no, there's more to this game than just scoring goals. You're supposed to be accountable to your teammate and not win the green jacket in January. Maybe let us wait till April before we present you with the worst plus minus a 50-plus goal scorer could ever have had. Even some of the guys that had no interest in defense were still minus 15, historically less than you. And yet you've managed to do something no one has ever done. And so their coach, who finished 2 points behind Detroit, you look at and you say, got to fire him. Get rid of the coach. And yet 2 points behind Detroit, and I would vote for Babcock as coach of the year. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then we look at Vancouver, and we see a coach to a man, their team has had a terrible year. They don't have a 50-point score. Henrik and Daniel Sedin are in the 90s in scoring. They used to be number one and number four. And that defense group with Hamhuis, Bieksa, Garrison, you're telling me that they're Edler, that they're that bad, and yet he keeps his job for now. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, that's where I guess if you've got skin in the game, ownership can decide the way this team goes.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it just seems to me that, and I understand that if the Blues lose, there's lots of questions. You know, the Blackhawks may have an excuse depending on injuries and how healthy they wind up being and staying. But they're going to clearly be disappointed. Not that I think Quenneville's going to get fired, even if they go out in the first round. But you know what I mean?
He's fired in the first minute after being fired.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, yeah. he's the wrong example. I just, it's just one of those interesting scenarios where you have this group of teams that none of them really stand out. They're all very, very good. But there isn't a supreme team this year. There isn't that obvious, well, this is the team to beat. Like, and I think if you ask 10 people on the street, who's the team to beat in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you might get 5 or 6 different answers. Don't you think?
Yeah, you would have, you could get your hockey so-called experts in, and they maybe would pick Boston in the East and in the West. You'd get 8 different responses, and maybe 2 would be the same. So, yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I come from the system, too, where I played with the Islanders, where it was Al Arbor, who was the coach, and it was Bill Torrey. And they were together for 2 decades. And Bill would draft the players, and Al would be responsible to make them players. And if at some point Al couldn't make them a player, then he would go to Bill and say, you've drafted Dave Chyzowski 2nd overall, and he can't play. Could you please fix this? And they would work together. They wouldn't work against each other with regards to building organizations. Hey, I've even thrown it out that, you know, you should have it where if the GM hires the coach and he wants to fire the coach, they both go.
Oh, I like that. And the broadcasters, too.
And, you know, then you get a situation where you're not burning through 5 and 6 different coaches because, well, someone's got to pay the price. We need some hide on the line here, so it's the coach that's going to pay the price, and I'll just move on and pretend that mistake didn't happen with me. No, there should be some more stability in an organization, and good ones like the Oilers when they were the dynasty teams and the Islanders when they were dynasty had exactly that.
Red Wings and Bruins don't start till tomorrow, right?
Right.
But you're not going to be on tomorrow, so I want to talk just for a few minutes on about that series a little bit. And almost everybody would say, well, it's, you know, the Bruins will probably win. But there's a constituency out there, and I think a majority constituency, that believes the Detroit Red Wings will give Boston all they can handle.
Yep.
You agree?
Oh, yeah. I think they have a chance to win the series. But
really, huh?
There's not as many of us who think that.
No, you're alone on this.
Not quite alone. I'm sure there's somebody else, Glenn.
I look at Boston, and they have a certain style that they want to play. They're guys who are up front. Their plus-minuses are close to plus 40. They said goodbye to 100 goals. They said goodbye to Seguin. You're not going to play like a Bruin. Or you said goodbye to Kessel. You're going to make that money in Toronto and be a two-zone player. Go ahead. Say goodbye to Blake Wheeler. 100 goals out the door. Who cares? They still win the President's Trophy, been to the Stanley Cup Finals, won a cup, lost in a final. They have a style that they play, and that style is so much full of accountability. They've got good goaltending. They play great without the puck, and I just don't think physically that this smaller Detroit team can handle what Boston is going to throw at them, and it is machine-like. There is no, we're going to hope you get an alley-oop for Ovechkin to score. There's no hoping in their game. They play hard, and I don't know if Detroit is big enough, deep enough, to put up with that style of game, even though they've had a wonderful season.
Well, I agree with you. Babcock will get my vote for Coach of the Year. He's never going to win it, but he's never won it, right? And that, which is crazy. He'd get my vote.
What really stood out to me was the one in Toronto Saturday night where the Leafs had a chance to jump back into the playoff realm. He had $25 million with the players sitting in the press box because of injuries. And Darren Helm, seldomly used because of injury, hardly had played this year, steps in and is the dagger for the Leafs, but certainly was the guy who helped propel Detroit with Nyquist and a whole bunch of guys we didn't even know about into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you know, Nyquist, I talked to a bunch of scouts about him, and he was playing in Maine, and there were other players in Maine that were drafted by NHL teams, and one particular president said to his associate, who's that Nyquist drafted by? And they kind of looked at each other, and I guess who? Detroit. Figures they got another jewel.
There you go.
The draft.
We got to let you go. Oh, have you signed your new deal with Rogers yet, by the way?
No, but I managed to get a hold of the number for the reception at Rogers.
Okay.
And so on Monday morning, I'm going to call and see if I can get through to, like, you have a secretary or something, a name I can call?
No, I got nobody. I don't know anybody here.
Okay, well, maybe I'll just call Steven and him and
I. Call Brent, because Brent knows everybody.
I'm here all the time.
Yeah,
Brent.
He's here like 25 hours a day. He thinks he runs everything here, so he knows everybody.
Just call. I'll look after
Brent. Rattling off names of people earlier today that are president of this or lead, head of that, and I don't even never even heard of them.
I'll buy you a coffee. Come on in.
Thanks, Steve. And I get respect from him. And again, now I've learned Kumbaya, the words, and I've got it on the bagpipes. So I'm set with it all.
Quit sucking up.
Call reception Monday.
Goodbye, Heels.
See you guys.
Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. The book is called Tales of a First Round Nothing, subtitle My Life as an NHL Footnote. Terry Ryan was drafted 8th overall by the Montreal Canadiens, wound up playing exactly that many games, I think, in the National Hockey League.
Am I on here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I can't hear anything out of the headphones, guys.
You don't need them.
Oh, perfect.
It's just us.
And listen, yes, that's true. And is it Mr. McGowan?
Bob is fine.
Okay, Bob, I'm wearing shades because I really look up to you. If anybody's to read this book, they'll realize that I look up to the media, certain members of the media, you being one of them, and of course Stevie over there, as much as I do hockey players.
With some exceptions, I'd like to say.
There's one notable exception
in that book. We'll talk about that later.
There is. I thought that might get me in hot water. I'm surprised no one's phoned me on it yet, but I want to be, I'm going to write a volume two. And it's going to be this. I tied together with, listen to me rambling, boom, boom, boom. I tied together with themes that I thought represented the game and some friends that stood out to me and helped shape my identity. So volume two, I'd like to say I wore my shades on the show with the man. By the way, you're one of the only people that can pull it off. I like to wear my shades indoors, but everybody says, look at that cool guy over there. This is going to be my platform. This is why I'm doing
it. Just blame me. That's okay.
That's it. I'm going to blame you.
Did I get any credit in this book at all?
That's what Bob always looks at first, by the way. He always looks at the back to see if his name's in it.
If I'm not in it, I'm not reading it.
It's unbelievable your name's on it.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think you're in the last paragraph, so read up to there and we'll see.
Volume two, hopefully.
Sure. Volume two, exactly, hopefully. I'm trying to get to 5,000 copies. I think that's a Canadian bestseller. I don't know where it is, and I don't. That might be very over the top and presumptuous, Stephen. But that's my goal because I'd like to get, I like doing this. I almost write out of, I get a lot, I talk a lot if you can't tell. I get anxiety, and it's therapeutic, and that's, the reason a lot of this was written.
Okay, you got to take the shades off now so people can see your beautiful
eyes. He can wear the shades.
No, because it's only, I can't deal with two guys wearing shades in this room.
Look at this handsome man. Brown-eyed handsome man. Like Chuck Berry said, or Buddy Holly, one of them came first.
All right.
You got to tell the, okay, well, I told you.
Here we go.
Show the people on television your beautiful teeth.
Oh.
Okay. No. You don't have to take them out, because I want you to tell the teeth story that's in the books. The best story, I'd say. We'll talk about Red Fisher later, but the tea story is really good.
Sure, I'll tell the, and thank you for rolling the drum roll. and I thought this may get me in hot water at some point, but whatever, it's a book of my experiences, and I felt some things had to be said, whether people liked it or not. But is it okay? Roll the story? All right, it's cool. So it was about 2001. And I'd been playing, with Montreal, I was always, there was a bit of tension there, although I have great memories. I had a problem with one or two people in the organization back in the day, but I look past that now. I feel honored to have played for the Habs. But at that time, I was poisoned with them. So we were at a ball hockey tournament in Montreal, my team from Newfoundland. And Newfoundland is decent at ball hockey. We have a chance at the Nationals. There's not many sports. Growing up, I played hockey, soccer, and baseball, and we were the sacrificial lamb. You go, you play the host first game. Host wins 10-1. Newfoundland, everybody loves our spirit, but, you lose. But in ball hockey, fast pitch, curling, now it's coming on. We had a chance. So we went to that, and I lost my teeth. It was touch icing in ball hockey at the time. So I went to dive for the ball and icing, and it bounced right in front of my head, and the guy took my teeth out. So they were half cracked. It looked like Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber. So it was either, I was going down to Dallas camp the next day. I'd just been released by the Habs. It was a really tricky situation. I whatever it was, they owned my rights for, and I got whatever release to go down there. I remember talking to Mr. Bob Gainey, one of my idols, and I was going there the next day. So the boys from Newfoundland, we go on a road trip. We always go out and have a few beers, get a good buzz on before we, and I knew I wasn't going to see them for a while, hopefully not for a year. So, or the end of the hockey season. So I opted to go out and drink through a straw instead of getting my teeth looked at that night. So, and it seemed sensible. So I get down to Dallas.
At the time.
Yeah, at the time. And, you know, so I was drinking. It really hurt. Like, my nerves were exposed, so I was wearing a mouth guard. Orange one. Looked like I was sucking on a banana or an orange peel all night. Get down to Dallas. And I'm like, okay, hook me up, doc. And I'm completely forgetting because in Montreal, you know, you just walk in and get your teeth done. So he's like, yeah, I guess, but that'll be, you know, $6,000 or $7,000. And I was like, yeah, of course I'm not going to get it done. I got to wait to sign a contract first. And I had a good camp. I ended up hurting my ankle, long story short. You know, I think I possibly would have signed. I was given that indication. And I hurt my ankle, high ankle sprain. So they're double affiliates. And Don Hay, who's coached against me in junior, he was coaching in Utah. So I really, really thought that, you know, that kind of upset me a lot. I was disappointed. But I wanted to go to Boise, their double affiliate, and say, you know, I can come up and make this squad. So, you know, and get back in the... I didn't think a high ankle sprain was as bad as it was. You're taught to play through an injury. Ended up being the downfall. I had to retire because of it. That's here and there. So I was down in Boise. I'll go to the doctor. This is about 2 months later because I went home to get my stuff. I went back down a little bit early. Finally, so I'm wearing a mouth guard a lot of the time. If not, I just got my mouth guard out, got a couple of painkillers in me, and I looked like Jim Carrey, Dumb and Dumber, like I said. So I went in, and I told the doc down there, and he says, well, you know, you just told me the story. You lost him in ball hockey in the summer. I'm not gonna, we can't pay for that. So now I'm really pissed off because, you know, the paychecks down there, although I love playing pro hockey and it was good to get, you know, but I think I was making $1,000 a week, which is great, but it's certainly not going to pay for my teeth. So, and you know, my signing bonus was either gone in divorce or wherever, but, you know, whatever. It translated into a nice, I got a place on the ocean. My wife, Danielle, and my beautiful kids, Tyson and Penny Lane, we love it. But that's kind of, you know, there's no gravy left from the NHL. People think you play one game, you get $1 billion. So, you know, I needed the money. So anyway, I told the boys my plan. I said, I'm going to knock them out myself. And just act like I did it in a game. So they're thinking, you know, this is not going to happen. So I waited 3 weeks after I told the doc this because to make it look believable. And the boys were back at, we went back to the condos. The way it works down there is, you know, it's great. I actually made more money there than the AHL because they take care of your room and board, your groceries, all that stuff, right? Mm. So we all lived in a complex, little pool, hot tub in the middle. It was great. So, but we went back and we were drinking one night. And I said, now's the time. I had about 6 beers in me. So I said, boys, just get, and one of the guys had a kid with it, and he had a little Nerf hammer. So I said, I'll just chip my teeth out. And it was way, way, way harder than I thought. I didn't realize how far up your teeth went. So each time I'd hit myself, it just, I tried to chip them out. It wasn't even close. Like, I was rocking my whole cranium. So finally I said, that's it. Stewie, go get Bobby Stewart. Lives here now. Great dude. Scored the winner for Maine in 99 when they won the national championship in Anaheim. So I took the sledgehammer, I said, I'm going to knock him out myself, closed my eyes, half loaded, and went boom. And I let up at the last minute because I was kind of scared. And see the scar I got here?
That was that.
So I could put my tongue right through my lip at this point. I said, I got to go all the way. There's blood everywhere. So boom. I knocked the whole row. I knocked 4 teeth out of my head. This one was the only one that resonated. This one, I got them all fixed except for this one. Actually, I lost this a few years later. So I had four of my teeth now are in the sink, and 2 of them were just chipped to begin with. So now I got to come up with a great story.
I just want to make sure people understand that you just hit yourself in the face with a sledgehammer.
With a sledgehammer, yes.
Yeah, okay, just to clarify. Keep
just
going.
To clarify. Yeah, okay. Now I'm looking, and you know, and the boys at this point, they thought it was a little over the top. There was laughter, but there was some T-bone, you're crazy. So I said, now what am I going to do? So I wear those really tight, I'm old school, I wear those Cooperall shell whatever deals. So they're tight, almost light pants. So when I went in early to the rink the next day, now I had a fresh wound on my face, so I had to get this by and say I did it in practice. So I'm talking to Kip Dribnek, I think his name was, the trainer, and the dentist, I think, was the doctor, or, you know, whoever we got for next to nothing, who was the most inexpensive guy in town, I guess. No offense, wherever you are. but he... So anyway, I went in, I was talking to him. So they're around the corner. I'm like, hey, Kip, what's going on? How's the wife and kids? You know, they're going to remember talking to me and they're probably going to think they saw me, but you know, which they did, but I never let anybody see it. The boys knew. And to their credit, they never really said much about it ever. So I put my 4 teeth in my girdle and, you know, they just stayed there because it's right. And I went on the ice, and Stewie knew the plan, so I slipped on a puck. Actually, Stewie shot a puck. I said, shoot it up around my ears when I'm going around the net, and I'll just act like I was trying to get out of the way. And one of those where I could hear it go by. I think he tried to hit me in the head. But anyway.
So you deliberately go ass over tea kettle.
I deliberately go down, and as soon as I go down, and there's only about three players on the ice. They're filing on, so no one was there to see it. The coaches or anything. I didn't want even them to have the judge on that. So I just ripped my gums, which was a fresh wound. I start bleeding all over the place, and I threw the teeth across the ice. And I went right off, and the doc says, man, you got bad luck. I can't believe it. So anyway, long story short, actually, no, that was a long story long. I got them all paid for, $6,500 U.S. I got my chiclets all paid for. And, you know, I don't know if there is a moral to this story. I don't know if there is. But it was certainly one of my more memorable experiences, and I'm glad... Like I said, I wrote this stuff down because it ended up being, you know, a great memory that came out of nothing, really.
Thank God for the statute of limitations in America. You know, they can't come after you now.
Thank God. Well, exactly. And if they ever did, I'd just say, well, I exaggerated. So there, I told you my plan.
So what happened to your career, in your own words?
Like, well, what? You know, I got that so much. I was getting that question a lot. It's kind of the reason I put the book. I always look at it from a real positive mindset. I came from Newfoundland. I was 14. I was rated, if not the top player, one of the top players in Canada. I was about 6 foot, 180, 190. I mean, I played junior that year. My first year Bantam, I played junior in Quesnel, BC. But Tri-City offered me to go out, and they guaranteed me they'd draft me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to live out there. So my dad and mom moved out with me. And I was an only child, so, and I was speaking like I was from the Bay in Newfoundland. If you think I got a bit of an accent now, you should have heard me then. In the middle of BC, there's no internet, there's not, you know what I mean, at the time. So
yeah.
People really, I felt really alone. And, you know, and I guess that'll come out, but that's not really answering your question, but it's leading to it. So I, you know, that's kind of why, and my dad played in the WHA. Dad played in Hamilton, actually, for the Red Wings, had 47 snipes 1 year. And but that's what he always said, you know, you got to write this stuff down. So I was rated real high going out there. I never fought or anything like that. I was a skilled player, you know, I was in Pee Wee, the MVP of the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament, stuff like that. And then, you know, I went to Tri-Cities, and in a modest year, my first year, 30 points, Lankow, I ended up being my line mate at 40. And my coach asked me maybe to play left wing. And, you know, I was used to, by this point, it was my third year junior. I really had a one-up. I thank my dad for that. Because he knew, I mean, I would have just stayed home and played for the high school team. There really wasn't many. I still didn't think, even though I was rated high, the NHL was ever a possibility. So just that's the way the mindset was in Newfoundland then. We were a bit, we felt inferior. You know, now it's definitely changed. And I'd like to take a bit of credit for that, myself and Cleary and, you know, guys like that, because I think we started the ball rolling. And now there's all kinds of guys. Nathan Knoll, Clark Bishop right now are playing on Team Canada under 18. So anyway... I ended up being, you know, I was a second-line centerman. Lanx was a better pivot than I was. So I went left wing, and I'm a pretty good fighter. And in the Western League at the time, you know, if you think of the good players coming out of the West, it was myself and Ryan Smith, Damon Lankow, you know, Shane Doan, Jerome McGinley, Sheldon Surrey, Zdeno Chara, Brian McCabe. There wasn't a whole lot of finesse there. So, you know, everything went my way. It was a fastball down the middle. If the draft was now, who knows if I'd go that high. But anyway, I went to the Habs, and they were my favorite team always were. And, you know, I really felt it a privilege to play for the team, and I still do. Good people. But in between, I had a major, major league concussion when I was 19. And I don't talk about it much in the book because it was a real bad memory, and I'd like to ignore it. But and it was a hit. I never got anything from fighting, ever. And I fought the toughest guys around, and I took all their punches. That's the way my fights were. You know, Domi, I fought him three times. I at least took 50 haymakers in the melon, nothing. I found when I would get hit, at least after the first one, my head would rock. And just think, you know, in today's game is a lot different. The more it gets back then, you know, I noticed, but the boards would move. It was plexiglass. There was a red line, you know, which is huge, you know, for slowing the game down a little bit, which is, again, veering off topic. But these are some observations I had. So I had that injury, and I think it set me back a bit. And, you know, Serge Savard and Jacques Demers drafted me. And then when Houle, and nothing against them, Rajon Houle came in and Alan Vigneault. And, you know, Houle did call me one summer, and he offered me great money to play in Quebec. But that was their minor league team after Fredericton. My contract was done. All they got to do is give me a 10% raise, I think, how it worked. And I was, so he offered me to be their property, but told me I'd be in Quebec all year, and I just wanted to
get traded. You weren't ready for that.
I would have taken less. I was publicly said I would take less to play somewhere else. I'd take the league minimum for a year because I was confident, at least in my determination. I would have practiced every day. I would have done what it took to make it. So, and I didn't think 8 games was enough. I mean, you know, look at guys, Chad Kilger, I don't know, Jason Weimer. These guys didn't end up being projected how they would play. They were in 5th and 8th overall, I think. But, you know, you get a chance. So I didn't feel I was getting a good enough chance. Remember, in my first year in the American League, I had 21 goals and 34 fights. I mean, what else do you want me to do? And the team wasn't making the playoffs. So I was, but I understand now. I understand the way I chose not to go to camp, Bob. Like, it was the most ridiculous decision I ever made. But my agent was Mike Barnett, and he agreed. And at the time, in the minors, we had me and Darcy Tucker and Craig Conroy and Brad Brown and Thomas Vokoun and, did I say Valerie Bure, Matt Higgins, Aaron Asham, all Gordy Dwyer. It's like we were all down there, and as soon as everybody else left, they went right to the show. And I was kind of sitting there, and I said, I want my chance too. You know, I don't want 125 or 50 to play in the minors. And I took 50 Canadian to go to St. John's, that's no joke, and play Bill Waters said he had a trade worked out for me. And it just became button heads. Me and Reggie Houle just got stubborn with each other. And now I haven't talked to him since. In my mind, that's totally water under the bridge. I know where they were coming from. And he said, you know, I didn't draft you, and I probably wouldn't have. You know, so I'm going to go with my own guys. And that's honest. And the only thing is I wanted that trade, and I wish I had gotten it because guys like
to get
Tucker,
the chance.
Yes. Tucker played like Aaron Asham. And, you know, look at the stats. Up until that point, it's not like I went and bombed out in the AHL. It's not. Whenever I went somewhere and got a chance, my style certainly doesn't look fancy, and I'm sure that if they looked at me practicing against those guys, I probably wouldn't have looked the greatest. But, you know, that was my style. I looked up to Rick Tocchet and guys like that, and that's the way I played. And they weren't looking for that then. And in Darcy Tucker's case, Tampa Bay were. In Aaron Asham's case, New Jersey were. That's my sob story. I don't talk to them about it much because, you know, I really respect the Habs. I understand where they were coming from. I was a hothead as a kid. I thought I should get more of a chance. But the way I look back at it now, a couple of years, I tripped over my bottom lip. But what are you going to do, man? I played for the Habs. That was my goal. Like you said in your book, which I loved, by the way, I think of the 100 greatest hockey arguments. You know, it's 1 in 33,000 or something kids plays pro. You know, I mean, I could have got...
You were one of them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I got four of my BJ Young, you know, a great buddy. And right, that's my stepson now, Tyson. Is BJ's kid. BJ died in a car accident in 2005. Played one game for Detroit. He had 50 goals in the Western League, 58, you know, in 1 year. He's a Red Deer Rebels, you know, gold. He's got the record for one season scoring. So, you know, there could be a whole lot worse. I'm sure that his family, which is my family now, I guess, you know, wouldn't care if he played a career in Detroit. They'd just like to have BJ around. And that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of ups and downs in my life, in my career or whatever. And I look back now, man, I'm still playing senior hockey. And for those, I'm playing in Dundas, the Allen Cup. For those who don't know, it's in Dundas this week. We're in the semifinal tomorrow. And what a great brand of hockey. I got to plug that because I play for the Clarenville Caribous. We won the National, the Allen Cup 3 years ago. And we hope we do this year. But if we don't, it'll be a great team. You know, Jay McKee's playing for Dundas with Barnaby played. He's not playing this tournament. Jason Ward, my old roommate, he's playing.
Oh, yeah.
Randy Rowe, Ryan Christie. It's a great tournament.
Guys who still want to play.
It's the passion. Yeah, Darren Langdon plays for Cornerbrook at home still. And he's 43 yeah. or 44. It's guys who want to play. What you're seeing when you watch senior hockey is the passion, and the money's not really there. I mean, we do get paid something, but it's peanuts. You know, we could all make more money doing something else, but we ride the bus every week. We have a 6-team league in Newfoundland, and we get there, and it's no different. And in fact, you know, it's almost more fun because the pressure's not there from the point of view of trying to get up anywhere. You're playing for the boys and, you know, and your community, and I'm proud of that.
Tales of a First Round Nothing, My Life as an NHL Footnote by Terry Ryan. It's available at bookstores all across the country, around the world, and up your street. And
it's lots of fun.
And he's threatening to write another one.
I certainly am.
So beware. Great to see you. Thanks for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, guys.
You can come back anytime you want.
Perfect.
The Break and more when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
13 before the hour. McCown and Brent, last few minutes of the program for today. Oh, by the way, we will be here tomorrow, even though it's a holiday for many people, most people, mm-hmm. almost everybody. Not for us.
Except for us. We will be
grinding it out.
Which is what we do.
We'll have a round table tomorrow. Who else is coming on the round table? Thank you very much. John Shannon will be here. And Cathal Kelly will be here.
Of the Globe and Mail.
Yes.
Yeah. Big changes in the newspaper business these days. A lot of shuffling around going on.
Nobody can keep a job. So that'll be nice. And we do phones in the first hour tomorrow? All right. Hope somebody's out there.
So don't hang. Leave your family behind and come out and listen to the show and phone Bob. Right? These family occasions, they're a dime a dozen.
Take it or leave it, you know. If they don't call me, I'll just talk. I'll pretend I'm talking to you. I'll be yelling and screaming.
I got a bunch of emails about how cranky you were earlier in the show. I said, no, no.
Who cares?
No, it's just, he's fine. I've seen
from a bunch of sabermetricians.
No, they weren't. No, those guys are, someone suggested we.
Those guys are what? Finish that sentence.
You'll hear from them.
I already have. I told you. After the first hour, I got like five.
It was suggested we should have our pal Jonah Carey in here to counterbalance you.
Well, I like Jonah Carey.
Yeah, but he would make a rather forceful argument. And he's not a guy living in his basement, I don't think. No, but he seems to be doing okay.
See, I've helped him with his career. I've given him a platform for his career here, and yes. I also plugged his book like hell, which is great, by the way.
It is. You know, it's terrific.
So he's not going to come on here and slag me.
No, but he might respectfully disagree with you. How about that?
Well, that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yes, and I think he would make a rather coherent argument about the utility of statistics in
baseball. And that's why I brought it up in the next hour, because I said in the first hour, you know, you can't disagree with these people. You can't even say, I don't get it, I don't follow it, I'm not sure what, you know. They go berserk. And that's what they did on Twitter. That's why we got into it. And then, of course, you know, you are just argumentative just for the sake of being argumentative.
That's not true at all.
See, you're arguing again.
We should talk about the, you know, we got about 1 minute here. But do you remember?
I can't do anything
the
in
Allen,
1 minute.
Allen Cup is a
I can do some things in 1 minute.
The boys from Newfoundland are playing in the Allen Cup this week. It is in Dundas. It goes back to 1908.
I know.
You know, it has an unbelievable history. See, and there was a moment in this.
Allen Cup champions used to represent Canada at the Olympics.
Yep. And there was, the Trail Smoke Eaters, I believe, and those kind of guys. And it was.
Penticton V's?
And it had its own, you know, senior hockey in this country was a big deal. It's a weird one now because some of the teams that play don't even have leagues. You know, they play and there's guys from northern BC
teams
there.
They don't even have players.
But it's, I'll tell you, in Newfoundland, where Terry's from, the senior hockey, the Herder Cup, is a big deal. You know, and it's people care about it. It's a classic local rivalry. There's all kinds of fights.
Must be a lot of travel, huh?
It's you cover a fair bit of ground because it's east coast to west coast. There's a team in Corner Brook, and there's a team there's teams on the other side of the island. So it's
Corner Brook's in the north, right?
Corner Brook is in the west.
Oh, it's in the west.
It's in the west near me. And but to go from
what's
there,
in the north?
St. Anthony. If you get all the way to the top.
Okay. Yeah, that's the place I was thinking of.
But kind of east to west or west to east is a long drive in the wintertime. But yeah, it's. There's an ex-NHL guys there playing. Darren Langdon's still playing for Corner Brook Deer Lake and beating guys up still.
Yeah, well, if you want to watch some good hockey.
It's loads of fun. But in Dundas this weekend, a lot of fun. I think the final's Saturday.
All right,
I believe that's true.
Okay. Well, it gives people something to do.
It does.
Our thanks to Terry Ryan for joining us, to Glenn Healy for joining us. I apologize for Brunt's performance today. And in spite of that, we're going to have him back tomorrow because it's too late to get a replacement. Good night from Toronto.